The next global stage. Challenges and opportunities in our borderless world. Author, Kenichi Ome. To realize the current global stage, all you need to do is to look at your dinner table. It's full of food from the four corners of the world. Salmon from Chile, sauce and spices from Brazil. Your dishes might be from China or Hungary, and glassware from the Czech Republic. Your dinner reveals the stage the global economy has reached today. 1. Borderless corporations. The last two decades have seen a remarkable decomposition of corporate functions, ranging from R&D in manufacturing to sales and marketing and financing. It is now common within an individual company for these functions to be located across national borders. For example, R&D in Switzerland, engineering in India, manufacturing in China, financing in London, while the marketing function and headquarters remain in the United States. 2. Borderless consumers. Most actions that the global economy performs often take place on computer terminals, through the code numbers of credit cards. It's the preferred means of carrying and spending money for hundreds of millions of consumers, yet the money that the credit card holders spend is never seen. 3. Borderless commodities. Commodities are becoming borderless too. It is almost impossible to buy a shirt that is genuinely made in America. Its fabric may come from Egypt, threads from Japan, and buttons from the Philippines. If only the sewing process takes place in the United States, how American does that make the finished shirt? End of economic practices. Economic practices are believed to control results. For example, if you decrease the interest rate, you would expect to stimulate the economy because businesses can borrow money from banks and make necessary capital investments. Likewise, an increased money supply by the central bank would drive down interest rates, making credit cheap. Businesses could then make aggressive capital investments because they could also expect higher prices and increased consumption from the market. This type of casualty has been the reason behind the confidence or ignorance of politicians who make a big promise of recovery of economy or increase in jobs. Why? They just ignore the strong effect of the global economy on their national economy. For example, a higher interest rate is good to attract money from the rest of the world, as Greenspan under Clinton's presidency demonstrated. The U.S. economy from 1992 to 2000 was euphoric, despite high interest rates, because the rest of the world pumped money into the country to enjoy high interest rates. Then in our global stage, a high interest rate is good for the national economy. If the money comes from the rest of the world, businesses can get money from the global economy and do not have to borrow money from the local banks. So again, the interest rate is no longer a decisive factor for the national economy. The shifts of the global economy. The global economy caused so many radical transformations and shifts in the world we live in, as follows. Great states are down. In the global stage, winners and losers are switching places. States that once were great are slowing down, while poor states are gaining ground. Poor India and China are up. Both China and India have the governance structure to help their regions to work interactively with the global economy. China and India managed to compress 200 years of post-industrial revolution development into a couple of decades. China and India were the first countries to recognize the power of the global economy as means of making a country stronger and wealthier. The shift from the inside to the outside. For possibly the first time in human history, prosperity and riches are not dependent on existing wealth of the inside. To put it bluntly, you don't have to be rich to get richer. In the past, the prosperity of Great Britain depended on industry, large resources of coal, and a network of colonies producing raw materials. In the global economy, there is no need for mineral resources or colonies. An area can be very poor in traditional resources, but still manages to win and thrive in the global economy. Consider India, China, Ireland, and Finland. These countries were part of others' empires, historically unable to support their populations. They experienced devastating famines that wiped out significant sections of their population through hunger or disease. Yet these countries are now at the forefront of the global economy. The shift from nation-state to region-states. The secret of winning the global economy lies in making the shift from the nation-state to the region-states. States must open their borders and allow their regions to deal directly with the outside world, attracting investments and industries that best suit these regions. Putting regions at center stage demands some radical rethinking of how we view governments, the states, and the world. This means that a lot of our nice cozy concepts about geography are going to have to be discarded. The most obsolete of these notions is the nation-state. The nation-state produces statistics known as national accounting aggregates. These include tables of the gross domestic product and are supposed to show the economic health of a particular nation. When the GDP is divided by the state's population, another magic number is found: GDP per capita. This figure can act like a combination as safe. When it's above a figure of 10,000, the country's rulers believe that they have arrived as a state, that they are no longer dirt poor, and that they are important players in the world's economic game. This allows them to become members of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. As we have seen, the global economy does not respect national borders. Both the GDP and the GNP includes only finished products and services. Many goods and services can be initiated in one country, but they are completed in another. If we look at cross-border business process outsourcing, we see that much of the back-office work involved in the provision of a service is carried out in a low-cost environment. Only the finished service is consumed in the host country. Yet the contribution made by people in another country is not properly registered. GDP and GNP figures offer only averages for a whole nation state. The major engines of economic activity in the global economy are not nations, but regions. The contribution and vitality of a particular region will not be discernible in a nation's accounting aggregate figures. Guidelines for governments. The global stage demands a new script for governments. Following are the major three guidelines that can help governments succeed in the global economy. 1. Reversing roles. Central governments should concede power to regions. Governments should not try to exert their powers in traditional ways, such as closing their borders to foreign investment or subsidizing weak national industries, or not allowing their regions to attract foreign businesses. Exerting such powers means they will only hinder the success of their economy in the current global stage. 2. Just educate. Governments should only concentrate on educating their people, then help them attract as much foreign investment to their region as they can, by developing their infrastructures. In the global economy, education is more important than natural resources. 3. Facilitate, do not create. The simple bottom line is that governments should not try to do things for businesses, but should allow businesses to do things for themselves. A region, not the nation, is the port of entry for prosperity. It is the strategic business unit for attracting and creating capital in the new global economy.